Hello, welcome to the Women in Big Data Brussels podcast, where we talk about big data topics with diversity and inclusiveness in mind. We do this to inspire you and to connect, engage, grow, and champion the success of women in big data. The aim of this podcast is to reveal to you what you can do with big data, how organizations and societies use it, and the potential of big data to create a better future for everyone.
AI in the past needs to be the bias tool, and in fact, in the future, is going to be the tool that prevents bias.
In this sixth episode, Valerie and I talk with Karen de Souza-Pezze, Senior Executive at Salesforce, and Anita Prinzi, Product and Marketing Manager at Omina Technologies, about bias in AI. We cover the past, the present, and the future. Let's start! Welcome, Karen, Anita. Thanks for joining Valerie and me to talk about bias in AI. So, Karen, can you tell us more about the history of bias in AI and where we stand today?
Absolutely. Thanks for inviting me, by the way. We talk a lot about the AI bias and the bias in the technology that we're building. And it's interesting for me personally, at least, to understand where is this coming from. To build an AI model, you need data, right? You need data to build these models, and then you're going to do some correlations. Your models are going to be biased. And why is this data biased then? And what are the implications for us? During World War II, a number roughly around 6.7 million women had to go to workforce because the men were not there anymore. They suddenly needed a lot of people really fast, and the women were available. A large share of these women working in very male-dominated jobs, constructing aircrafts, assembling ammunition. The manufacturing industry alone, I think they counted for more than 3 million female factory workers between 1940 and 1944. But the thing is, as soon as the wartime ended, most of these women were fired because a lot of these jobs were promised to the veterans once they came back. But just this moment alone was very important because women got a taste of what it is to, you know, work, have your own money, become independent, and so on. It created a movement of women that really wanted to work. During World War, women were eventually doing most of the ballistics computing. When you think about that, like in 1943, almost half of the people employed in the ICT sector were women. Where did it go wrong? Even though women were roughly 50% of the computer programmers, not many of them were promoted to leadership roles. The leadership remained male-dominated, not only in computing, but also in other industries. The point is that the leadership has historically been dominated by men. And the decisions that are being made are decisions that are lacking gender perspectives. And even though women have been trying very hard to integrate the job market, there were so many historical barriers for them. And then you reach the point of very little women in leadership. Most of the decisions are being taken by men. And if everyone has their bias, a lot of these biases are going to be gender related because a lot of the decisions are not being taken by women. So you see, all these events led to the point in which we generated a lot of data that was biased, a lot of data that was lacking gender perspective, a lot of data that didn't account for differences between men and women. And once you get all this data, and then you train AI models completely unaware of the bias that it exists, you're going to be confronted by the bias.
What you're referring to is historical bias. There is a certain bias and prejudice in society which sinks into the data on which the models are trained. And I think one canonical example is the Amazon AI-enabled recruitment tool. Historically, there have been more males on technical jobs than women. Also, the algorithm had another issue, which actually leads me to the second concept of representation bias. So it was an algorithm aimed to automate the recruitment of IT jobs at Amazon. Also, there was like a bias in the data in the sense that there were more females quitting the job after a year than, for example, males. So by taking that time window of 2 years, there was already an implicit bias in the representation of the problem. So Amazon scrapped their AI-enabled recruitment tool because it was clear that it favored male applicants. Also, I think it's very important when we try to support decisions in society that we really think about how will we represent the problem. A similar example of representing the problem in a proper way occurred in the United States. So in the United States, there is an algorithm that they used, and they might still use it actually, to decide which patient should get extra medical care. The end goal was actually they wanted to estimate who would need the most extra care so that they would be treated in the hospital, and those with lower probability of needing extra care would be treated out of the hospital. So unfortunately, how did they represent this problem? They looked at not the need of extra medical care, but the target in this case was the future cost of care. How much people would spend on the medical care. And when you think about this target, this outcome is actually not a race neutral measure, because it is proven that blacks with similar chronic conditions as white patients historically have spent much less medical treatment because they go less often to a doctor than white patients. So just by the way they represented the outcome measure, there was already a lot of bias in the whole system. The AI had to be biased because it learned actually how much people spent of going to the doctor. I think that's a very important lesson. I think whenever you try to automate a certain decision with AI, that it merits a lot of attention of how you will represent the problem and think about, could it be that this implicitly has some gender bias or ethnic bias and so on.
Are there other things that are important if you want to fix bias in AI?
I think there's, broadly speaking, two things. On the one hand, there's a lot of mathematical tools, analytical tools available to either analyze your data for existing of historical bias. You can try, obviously, to avoid a representation bias, but there's a lot of technical tools to detect bias based on the chosen group fairness metric. So the most common ones, to be very concrete, is disparate impact and equal opportunity. Professor Sandra Wachter clearly pinpointed, for example, European legal definition is actually matching very well the equal opportunity. Also very important to know is that there are many potential definitions of group fairness. And why is that so important? Because it's your mathematical reflection of what a fair decision stands for.
Yes, I completely agree with you. And in fact, one of the things that I tell people very often is that women are now getting highly educated on gender topics, but we are lacking men in the conversation. So we really need to start focusing on how do we bring men as allies? How do we bring this conversation to them as well, so they are aware of what's happening? I really feel like now it's the time in which we start bringing everyone into this conversation.
I think the professor and the universities should be also giving some training about the bias and how to manage this, to be conscious that there is bias and that we have to keep that in mind.
It's important that if you reflect on decisions and you say one group is not treated as fair as the other group, indeed, that you involve all parties and you openly can discuss what's happening. So to that extent, I agree definitely that we need to involve males into the process for sure. To some extent, probably they are already in the process, but it's also a matter of perhaps looking into our ethical stand, because we do not every day reflect on our ethical standards. There's a certain policies that are also active and been there maybe for 20 years. I think a lot of these policies have been devised a long time ago by mainly male leaders. And that's why they still reflect that kind of predominantly male perspective.
And how do you do that within Omina Technologies?
We recruit in a very diverse way. So we do have people from different ethnic backgrounds. I think part of the solution is also still investing in STEM, because we still see when you have a job opening that there are still more male candidates than female. The other thing what we want to start doing, and it was recommended by Professor Anne-Noé, is to measure the bias in your team. There's something like the implicit attitude test, which tells you what kind of bias you have in your team. And based on the results of that test, you can decide, obviously, to first make sure that you communicate that you have a certain bias and try to overcome it within the existing team. But apparently, you can also use it to guide your future recruitment. So to make sure if you have a certain gap in terms of your attitudes might be a little bit biased to recruit somebody that actually can bring in that perspective.
Absolutely. I think not even bias, but really unconscious bias. That's one of the biggest issues that we have, because I do believe that the vast majority of the people are having these biases and taking these decisions simply because they don't know. And how do you know what you don't know? So we really need to look into our own bias overall and take it on an educational level. I really do wonder, and that's actually an action point that I'm taking from this podcast, if universities are now educating their students about diversity and inclusion, AI, gender bias, any types of bias in AI.
Karen, I have the chance to give a conference how to reduce the bias in the big data analytics and data science. It should be all along the master, the bachelor.
The earliest you teach this, the best, right? So in fact, I think this should even be taught in schools, because what companies are doing now with all these D&I policies is basically covering, putting a patch on the issue. When I go to some events and I talk to corporate people and so on, and they discuss amongst themselves, I say, look, the most important thing that you can do today for humanity about this topic is go back to your children and educate them about what I just told you. Bring it to your small children and educate them since a very early age that everyone has bias, everyone has unconscious bias, and what this can lead someone to do or to think about.
So we already talked about the past and the current situation of bias in AI. I also would like to look at the future. For instance, Valerie, what do you think?
For me, I would say mainly in Europe, because we can speak about the US and China, but it's totally different. In Europe, they define a tool, an assessment, where we can check some cases, where we can define if the AI is trustworthy, is ethical. This assessment should be more and more detailed in the next years for me, and maybe that would be a reference to be sure that we are all included in this topic, I would say.
So what you're saying is it's work in progress.
When you develop an AI program, you need to maintain it. So you need to check it again and again to be sure that it's still trustworthy, ethical and fair.
I understand. What do you think, Karen?
So AI in the past used to be the bias tool. And in fact, in the future, is going to be the tool that prevents bias. Because if you take, for example, the cases of recruiting and hiring that became so popular, you can also build AI models that are going to make recruiting and hiring completely unbiased. For example, when you're interviewing someone, you always have this little bias. You know, if it's a person that comes from the same city as you and you speak the same dialect, and the AI will be able to be much more impartial about all these small biases that cloud our judgments. I really see AI as acting exactly the opposite, breaking all the bias and making fair decisions. AI is going to bring us clarity and insights about the future. And the thought that I wanted to close with is that AI is created by people. It's not the artificial intelligence that is biased. It's really our society. And AI is only augmented in this bias. It's only being a mirror. So I really see AI in the future as the mirror that shows us like, hey, this is biased, this is wrong, and there is proof. So that's where I would see AI evolving towards.
Okay, thanks for that. And you, Anita, the future of AI, how does it look like?
I think today we mostly reason only on the data and the outcome of our standards in the past. So what if tomorrow our AI is not only looking at historical data, but also takes into account our future policies, our future ethical standards? What I would like to stress is that actually you could define your ethical standards today and design your AI algorithm in such a way that it will meet those standards. We need to have a paradigm shift from being reactive and testing post hoc whether the AI algorithm is biased towards gender, towards a situation where we a priori decide what kind of behavior and what kind of standards we expect in terms of making decisions towards certain protected groups. For me, that's the biggest challenge for AI in the future. How can we combine data policies and then come to decisions that meet those standards? I think it's important that the community thinks about how can you drive future decisions by not only looking at historical outcomes, which are the result of policies of the past, but including also the policies you would like to adhere to in the future.
I understand. So are you then also saying that we have to hold ourselves to higher standards? And that's something that we will see back in the algorithms.
You need to make your algorithm aware of having certain standards. No, we are assuming that the algorithm is aware of the standards that we want to meet. If you don't optimize AI solutions beyond accuracy, beyond interpretability, you don't optimize them for your particular definition of fairness, you cannot expect that magically the AI solution will meet your ethical standards. So we need to reflect on how can we, instead of the traditional objective functions of algorithms that are mostly optimizing accuracy, and sometimes they're optimizing already interpretability, how can you also include other measures, group fairness, and so on? There's some options there already in the literature, just to be completely transparent. There's probably other options as well, and that's what we are trying to look into. If you take, for example, the European AI Act, if you take non-discrimination acts, there's particular legal constraints there. But obviously, every company has its own standards as well as society. So if you can reflect those in a mathematical way, and you tell your algorithm you have to create an AI solution that basically needs to adhere to the legal hard constraints, but also to the more like softer constraints of what your preferences are in terms of how the AI solution will make decisions towards women, that is actually something that we need to look into. How can we build systems that account for this kind of objective in addition to just optimizing for interpretability and accuracies?
That's clear. And if our listeners want to deep dive, do you have some resources that they can check out?
I am going to recommend you my all-time favorite book. And this book is really the one that I have read 3 or 4 times, and it's still on my bedside. It's Invisible Women: Exposing Data Bias. It's by Caroline Criado Perez. She is half Brazilian like me. I am also very proud of that. And she wrote the book Invisible Women: Exposing Data Bias in a World Designed for Men. The book is on how historically women were discriminated or they didn't have their perspectives heard, and how this all led to a huge data gap, a huge gender data gap. I really recommend everyone to read Invisible Women.
Thanks for that. Anita, is there a book or podcast you recommend to our listeners to deep dive in?
I would like to recommend a book by Professor Lode Lowaert, Way Robots. What I think is important in the book is the specification of the notion of justified and unjustified bias. That's a notion mm-hmm. that is often overlooked, that some of the bias can actually be justified.
Well, thanks for this recommendation.
Just one last thing, because since we're talking about different sources, this woman that wrote Invisible Women, she also has a podcast, which is really nice to hear. And it's called Visible Women.
Thanks for this addition. Karen, Anita, Valerie, thank you very much. It was really good and a pleasure to talk with you.
It was fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Women in Big Data Brussels podcast. We appreciate it if you get in touch with us to provide your feedback or request to partner up and be a guest. You can contact us via datawomen@protonmail.com. That is datawomen@protonmail.com. You also find our contact details in the show notes. Tune in next time.